Welcome into Public Perspectives here on AM 1340 KXCO. Ray Michaels joined by Graham Goodwin, Administrator for the Audrain Ambulance District. Good morning, Graham.
Good morning, sir.
How are you this morning?
Doing well.
Good deal. Now, you all have an issue on the ballot coming up on Tuesday. What is the issue that's on the ballot?
We have a proposition. It's called Maintenance of Essential EMS Services. It is going to add 30 cents. The request is to authorize a tax levy by 30 cents per $100 assessed valuation. That will be subject to the mandatory rollback of the sales tax and the Hancock Amendment. That is what we're asking for.
And why is the levy increase needed?
At this point in time, the situation I come is that I've been with the Ambulance District for 2 years now. I started June of 2020. And looking at that, one of the things we've been doing is trying to manage the budget and look at what we have and what we're going on. We have been able to hold costs and keep things somewhat under control by putting off capital expenditure. And so what's happening is right now is the fact that we've increased costs, we've increases in minimum wage, it's making us less competitive in trying to recruit and retain staff compared to other districts around us and to just the general public, because, you know, and other companies are offering higher wages and offering benefits that they never used to quite offer before. Our starting pay for an EMT is $12.50 an hour. Our starting pay for a paramedic is $14 an hour. Minimum wage will be $12 January 1 of 2023. I haven't given my guys a pay increase in 2 years, so they were already lost $1.70
Sure.
Against minimum wage as we move forward. So trying to keep ourselves competitive, replacing our equipment is going on there, such as our ambulances. We've all got about 150,000. We're starting to have issues with the increased distance that we're traveling. Since we don't have a hospital inside the county right now, that is adding up to costs for our maintenance and to our fuel and just creating wear and tear. So that plan of replacement of equipment needs to start happening sooner than later. It's been needing to go on. I've been trying to put it off for as long as I can, and I don't think we can put it off for much longer.
Well, sure. Everything needs to be maintained, and especially vehicles.
Yes.
Everything has gotten more expensive.
Absolutely.
For the general public, and especially for emergency vehicles.
Yes.
Now, how much do you think the increase will bring in on an annual basis?
Well, I've got to wait till I get from the Board of Equalization the exact amount of the aggregate value of the real estate and personal property within the district. And the district area that we're talking about is Mexico School and Community R6 school districts. That's what makes up Audrain Ambulance District. So if you're not sure if you're in the Audrain Ambulance District, if you pay school taxes to those two schools, then you are in our district and you should see that. So with that going on there, I am going around about 900,000, or just a little more than that, a bit more than that. It totally depends on what happens with the Board of Equalization. I won't hear about that until the end of the month. I do see that aggregate value is up from last year, but there's also the Hancock Amendment that may make some other adjustments as well, and I'm waiting to hear about that. August is when we set personal property tax rates, and that's generally done every August. We will have a hearing and everything else there, so that's still going on, and we're still trying to work out exactly how and what is prospective revenue from coming from personal property at this point in time.
A lot of moving parts.
Absolutely.
Now,
and the other thing on top of that is what's going to happen with inflation for the rest of the year,
right?
And all of those factors that go into play as well.
Now, has there been any talk of perhaps expanding the district west into Centralia
School District? We did that on the ballot several years ago, it was defeated. So there is that no man's land, which we mutual aid with Boone EMS, who are they have got a base in Centralia. We mutual aid with them. There is no plans on putting that onto the ballot at this time. Personally, I'm not sure that unless we're able to give them something, And we can't afford to put on another crew and put a base out that way. And I don't anticipate us doing that in any time in the near future.
Got it. What about a surcharge? And I bring this up because there's an agency in Iowa that was talking about adding a surcharge for their non-emergent ambulance runs. Is that anything that would bring in any extra revenue for you?
Well, when we stop and we look at that, we've got to look at the billing and how it goes there. So 62% of our revenue from billing comes from Medicare. 15% comes from Medicaid. Then there's about 10% that comes from the regular health insurance, and then the balance is either self-pay or car insurance. And so when I look at this, adding on a surcharge, basically what happens is Medicare and Medicaid go, we've set the rate for the year. You can add the surcharge that you want. It is going to be ignored. You will just write off more money. And the insurance companies come usual and customary. So they may or may not accept it. I think that they would probably oppose it a bit. And then lastly, the ones that end up with it would be the individuals who really can't afford it because they're the self-pays, and most of them are self-pays because they can't afford insurance or have those huge deductible plans where they couldn't afford a lower deductible.
And couldn't afford a surcharge to go on top of it.
And
that,
so. Yeah. So basically when we look at this, there could be a small increase, but more often than not, it's going to be just result in a larger write-off. We are going to look and evaluate rates and everything else as we move forward as well.
Very good. Now, what is the funding structure for the district?
The funding structure is that we have our billing, which is for the runs, and most of that is basically just for transports. We as a district, as an ambulance district, as an industry, are considered transportation rather than healthcare. There is a push to switch and change that so that we will also get paid for when we do treatments on scene and we ultimately don't transport the patient. But most times when we do that now, we have to bill the patient directly if we are going to be doing that because insurance won't pay for it because we didn't transport. So that makes up 38% of our revenue. And the crazy thing about it is when I look at our core volume for the year, our transportation is about 60% of all the calls we go on. 2019, that was 70%. So we have dropped on what percentage we're actually transporting. And so that changes the dynamics about how much we're bringing in there. Now, secondly, we have a sales tax. It is a half-cent sales tax that we collect. If it stays on track, and if anyone can predict whether we will go into that recession or if inflation or what will happen or if people will keep spending in our community, we could bring in $1.1-1.2 million total. And that about 45% of our revenue. And then the balance of that is made up of property tax. Of course, there are some sundry things where we charge for CPR classes and we may get some grants and things like that that come into play as well. But basically, the personal property tax or the real estate tax there, the property tax, rolls back by half of what we bring in from sales tax. And that is a mandatory rollback that was put in place. So back in 2010, when the sales tax got put on, people may have been told that your personal property tax will go away. Actually, what happens here is the rate of 30 cent, which was established in 2008 when we formed, is still in place. And then what happens is we look and see how much sales tax we took in for the first 6 months of the year. So I can tell you that for this year so far, we've taken in about $625,000. Then we look at last year's sales tax and we look at the last half of the year. And the question comes in, did we bring in more than the first half, the same or less? We brought in less than the first half, so we rolled back a little bit of that. So from 625,000, we're rolling back to like $622,000, which is taken off of the amount that we would come in. So I'm not sure exactly if 30 cents will be our max value because I haven't heard from the state auditors yet what the max is, but that changes because of the Hancock Amendment, and that's a complicated formula. I am looking at it, and I'm not exactly sure what is affected and everything else, so I'm waiting to see about that. It may roll back the max amount, and then once we do that, we times that by the aggregate value. This point in time, that's a preliminary number. I should know here shortly whether the numbers that I have are going to change or not. I'm going to assume that they're not changing. So that means that we will be bringing in just over 900,000, give or take, which is a little more than what we were anticipating because we were comparing things when we put this on the ballot compared to last year's aggregate value. And then we roll back the 600,000. So that will bring us down, and my quick calculations is that if we just go on the current tax rate, it will be 10 cents per 100 assessed value, slightly more than it was last year, but assuming. Now,
and we know what that does.
Yes, yeah. So that's assuming, and then depending on what happens on Tuesday, will depend on whether we can add an additional 30 cents to that. At that point in time, we will be looking at our numbers and we'll seeing what's that and seeing what we need and whether we will or will not do our voluntary rollback, which is always a possibility. And that could come into play. I'm not exactly sure. But at this point in time, I'm trying to look at 2023's budget. Doesn't start till January 1. And I've got to try to work out what's going to happen to our economy and to inflation, to the supply chain, all those factors come
into
play.
Gas prices, you mm-hmm. name it. So.
I mean, they're down right now, but who knows when they will go back up.
Right.
And, you know, earlier in the year, they were predicting $8 a gallon for gas. So we'll see what happens.
Fun times.
It is. It's a really interesting time. And trying to make trying to work out what is the best for the community and the best for the district as we move forward.
Now, we kind of talked about some of the expenditures that you've got coming up as far as maintenance and things mm-hmm. like that. Are we talking about replacing any ambulances during this year? Or
well, the reality comes to it, if I place an order for an ambulance this year, we probably will get it in the first quarter of 2024. So it's over a year out for the potential orders on that. And when I look at that, there's two choices that the district has. Choice number one is we buy a new ambulance. We can build it up to the safety specifications that are of the standards of today. And that would cost us somewhere in the region of $320,000 is what they're estimating right now. But that will depend on what happens. But the other option is that we can remount. So we can take the box that is on our existing ambulance and we put it on a new chassis. That is what they're telling me is going to save about $100,000. So around $200,000 or a little more, give or take, depending on what things need to be updated and fixed in that. And because it is an existing box, we don't have to rise up to meet the new safety standards. They're still safe. We will make some modifications and changes. There's certain things in there, you know, that there's wear and tear. There's the device that loads the stretcher into the back of the ambulance. That's at the end of its useful life. That's about $28,000-$30,000. It could be more by the time we get around to getting one when we start to replace it. But we need to start that process of replacing all five of our ambulances. And over a period of time, we brought four of them in 2016, I believe, and we can't afford to replace all four at once. So we need to start the plan before they get to the point that they are costing way too much money to maintain and that we have to buy multiple in 1 year. And this is part of the process of doing that. So getting those parts, getting just general equipment, stretchers we have at the end of their useful life expectancy. One is 15 years old and they're telling us don't use it with a patient, but it's going to take 6 to 8 months before we even possibly could see another stretcher. So there is huge delays with certain items on that, depending what is in it. Then, of course, medical supplies. on a regular basis. Some of them were getting limited. Others, they just are on back order, and we'll see them when we see them. But the shortages and the delays that happen with that basically drives up prices for us, because alternatives are always more expensive than what we were getting. And then the other thing about it is when it comes available again, there's generally a price increase.
Sure. Now, has that affected medications as well?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
That affects medications. We have one medication right now that's been on back order for 2 or 3 months. Fortunately, it's one we don't use very often. But as we move forward, hopefully we get it here soon, because we're down to one spare. And then we've got to start looking at how do we keep things stocked on the ambulance. That there is always certain medications that for the last 5 or 6 years go on shortage on a very frequent basis. Surprisingly, they keep saying it is the packaging, that the saline, you would think salt water would be easy to get, our IV bags, our IV flushes, it's the packaging that's in short supply, so therefore we can't meet your needs and supply this, and every time it goes up and up, we start looking for alternatives, and alternative suppliers, they price gouge. I've got one company say, yeah, well, we can get just normal saline, but it's about 2 or 3 times the price. And it's like, do we pay that, or do we hopefully get some more and wait, and that it'll come through our normal channels? Those are some of the challenges we're facing.
Almost be more cost effective to go back to glass bottles rather than the plastic bags, wouldn't it?
Yes, except glass bottles in the back of ambulances and a moving vehicle don't go too well.
True. I mean, they'd have to be protected. But
yes.
Now, what about getting a demonstrator model ambulance? Would that save significantly more than even a remount?
No, because there isn't any available.
Okay.
Basically, right now, is a lot of the manufacturers that have been making them, I've been talking to some of them to our local, and we're starting to look into the process of how much it will cost to remount, what things we need to do to change, because, making sure that we can disinfect the back of the ambulance are better than what we've been doing. I mean, we have added a system into the air vac which cleans the air as the air vac is, the AC or the heat is running. So it's continuously cleaning the air, but having some type of device that will actually disinfect the ambulance while we drop the patient off into the hospital is an option to try and make sure that as we move forward, as we leave potentially the COVID area, if it ever actually finally leaves, or whatever is the next one, that we can make sure that we are doing everything we can to decontaminate our ambulance so that the next person who's in it is not exposed to the things. We wipe down and do everything after the call, but just ensuring and taking that next standard test to make sure that everything is out of the way is one of the things we're looking at.
Now, are some of those more the ultraviolet light systems?
Ultraviolet light system is what we have inside the ductwork. So as the air passes the ultraviolet light, it is purified. So anything in the air is getting cleaned. But anything that there is a system that the light can actually come down from out of the ceiling, that when we shut the doors at the hospital, we can press the button and it will clean while the crew is inside the hospital. So when we come out, we just do the touch-ups and everything else, but it is doing a really good job at disinfecting. And then one of the other concerns about when we wipe down things is what we wipe it down with. Bleach items are something that we've got to try to avoid, because it breaks down plastic, and our equipment that is plastic, will the warranty be void for the case if they determine we used a bleach product? So we're looking at all those aspects and just trying to make sure that we're doing everything we can to provide the safest environment for our patients and for our crew.
Very good. What about staffing for you all? Do you still need full and part-time help?
We, at this point in time, are fully staffed.
Congratulations.
Yes, and I hope to keep it that way. We're potentially doing a small raise and trying to get them get competitive so that they don't get drawn away to someone who's paying a lot more money than what we're able to pay. Part-time paramedics, I would like to have a few more. Every time we get to talking about how much I can pay them, that's sort of when the willingness to work for us stops. It's just one of those things that we've got a few, would like a few more to help fill in the spots, because, you know, people get sick, people want to go on vacation.
Imagine that. Somebody wanting to go on vacation.
They deserve it. I mean, working in healthcare is extremely stressful. And so I encourage them, you know, take some time off, take your time off, and relax, because we don't want any of our guys getting burnt out.
Because which simply leads to more turnover.
It leads to more turnover. Turnover, and it leads to more turnover, and also the other factor, it affects the quality of care, and we want to make sure that we're maintaining that care quality to our residents and to this community.
Graham, you are taking ambulances out of the district much more frequently since we don't have a hospital here in the county. What has that done to the budget? How often are you having to have mutual aid companies come in to help out? Explain how that works.
Okay, so when we were established back in 2008, we had the local hospital, and we could turn around. At that point in time, we were taking about 75% of, if I remember correctly, of our transports to Audrain. By 2021, we were down to 38%. And this year, this quarter, we were at 30%. Now we're at zero. So basically what happened was is that if we look back to 2019, a good chunk of our call volume was turned around in about an hour or so. Now it's taking 60% of our calls, which is everything we transport, is going out of district, and that means 2 hours. From the time we pick you up to the time we drop you off at the hospital, and then commute back to be within district again, we're talking approximately 2 hours. And what that comes down to it is that turnaround time changes how many ambulances that we need. Because when we look at how many ambulances does a district need, and I've been talking about this in the town hall meetings and so, we know that, you know, the number of people that live in our community is 25,000 in Audrain County, but when we look at the district, we're probably in the region of 18,000 to 19,000. It's a rough count on zip codes that I did, and so then we're servicing that with three ambulances. And then it comes in, how frequently do we have calls? Well, that is one of those things that you can never predict. When will someone call communications needing an ambulance? How frequently does it happen? And that's a big factor. Now, one of the things that we do know now is that it's taking twice as long. It's taking 2 hours to turn around 60% of our calls. And then the next chunk is that our refusals and our disregards are taking up pretty much 40%. So we're pretty much either we'll turn around a call in less than an hour, or it's over 2 hours. And there's nothing in the middle that used to be a good chunk of what we were talking about. So then we look at, what does it cost to provide these services? And this is where it comes down, and we have to look at cost benefit. There's a financial aspect involved to this, but there's also a healthcare side of it, and it's quality of care. So when I look at these types of things, it's like I can make the statement here that our Station 2 doesn't bring in the revenue to offset the costs, but the value there is the fact that people in Ladonia and Martinsburg get an ambulance most of the time so much faster. And that changes the quality of life, that changes outcomes. And so that's an extremely important thing. So when we look at this overall, over the whole district, we're turning around and saying, how many ambulances do we need? And I can tell you here, just a couple of days ago, in 40 minutes, we had 5 calls. Well, 3 of them were our ambulances, 1 was our support person, and then the 5th was mutual aid. Now, exact numbers for mutual aid are hard to determine. I've got to try to pull them out of the information from dispatch. But we also mutual aid the surrounding communities as well when they run out of ambulances, because they're in the same situation as us. They are traveling further. If they were bringing patients to Audrain, they are now traveling further afield as well, and that changes the way that goes there. So pretty much lost like right there. But the reality comes down to it is I could turn around and say 5 ambulances, we will never run out of them. Well, that cost is, you know, is extremely expensive, And there is so much redundancy that I would say a good chunk of the time, we don't need five ambulances. Right now, at this point in time, there's a good percentage of the time that three ambulances meets our needs, but there is an increasing frequency when it doesn't. And that's where we stop and we look and go, are we at a point that we need to put on a fourth truck? Is it getting to that point where the call volume is such and with the turnaround time that we are running out of ambulances too frequently? Most of the time, most people don't know because they don't need the service. It's the ones who call that will find that out. So when I look at that, it's like, do I need a 12-hour truck? Do I need a 24-hour truck? If I do a 24-hour truck, I am looking at, I need to get, if it's a 24-hour truck, I need to hire six more staff people. And I need to probably potentially look at where am I going to put them up? Where are they going to sleep when they have downtime? If I'm looking at a 12-hour, it's a lot easier. But then we're talking about we're now down from having two spare trucks to having one spare truck. And with our aging fleet, it becomes a little bit of a concern. And trying to get another truck in here and order it quickly, it's just going to take so much longer anyway. So those are the dynamics that we're looking at. And it gets really complicated and it's really difficult. At this point in time, I'm on that point to say, you know, do we need more or are we okay? And then half of my staff don't live in our community. So my ability to call in people to put up a truck at peak times when we need to is greatly reduced right now because there's a very limited number of people that I can call on and get into a station in a timely fashion to be able to put that truck up.
Sure. Now, what else should listeners know about the district? The floor is yours. Whatever you think they should know, here's your chance to sell them.
All right. At this point in time, we are trying and we have done and continue to provide the best quality service that we can. We plan to keep on keeping the level of care that you're used to. Now, it does depend on, there is a few dynamics that could change some things in this point. Part of that is being, when will we have a hospital in our community? What services will that be able to provide? How much of those transports that we're taking out of county now can we take to this? How many transfers will start to come out of that facility if they aren't able to meet the needs of the individuals that go there? And how that will affect us? That's a whole dynamic that I haven't got a crystal ball for, and to see that goes there. I know that the hospital is working very, very hard to be able to open up, and they hopefully will be here shortly. But we'll have to wait and see what services they will be able to provide and how it goes from there. When we look at this, there are other aspects that we're doing. We're looking at grants. We're looking at finding other ways for revenue and funding. One of the things out there that is some time off, but I hope to see, is what I would refer to as community paramedicine. We have a good chunk. It used to be about 18-19% of our call volume was, I do percentages, it's a lot easier for me to remember, was what I would call refusals. So in other words, patients call us, we go out, we either treat them on scene, and then they decide not to go to the hospital, or we do an assessment, and they decide then that, you know what, I don't think I need to go to the hospital. I can wait till I can see my doctor, what have you. And that number has risen from about 19%, and it's about 30% now. So that's a huge number. One of the things I would like to do is to see if we can have someone in a support vehicle responding to those types of calls to see, can they help them make the decision and keep an ambulance free? And also the fact is that there's a big push in the industry that we get paid for the treat on the scene and don't transport. That is something that hopefully will get changed as we move that into the future. And we can try to sell to the insurance companies, to Medicare and Medicaid, that it's saying that, you know what, they don't have to go. Because right at this point in time, if we fix you, if you have low blood sugar and we give you a medication, we raise your blood sugar, well, there really is no need to go to the hospital. But Medicare will not pay, when insurance don't pay, unless we transport you to the hospital. And then they're more than willing to pay the ambulance bill plus mileage as well as the hospital ER bill, when basically they could have been left on scene. We could have followed up with the primary care, done some like teleconferencing here with the, you know, that telehealth and type of stuff like that, where we could have avoided all of that and still got a small amount because mileage wouldn't be involved in it.
Right.
But at least that way we are doing what's best for the patients. We have to come up with a way that we're meeting the need. We're able to go out there, assist our community. There's a lot of people that don't want to get transported right now because they're worried about how they will get home. And that's a big concern. It's like, how do you get back from Columbia if you don't have a ride, if you don't have someone to turn to and those types of things? And that can get very expensive. And I can tell you that the insurance companies generally don't pay for the return trip. There's only specialty situations where they will even consider that. So we are looking for alternative funding and alternative ways to do this. We're looking at replacing our equipment and getting into a capital maintenance program where that we are slowly but surely on a regular basis turning over equipment so we don't get into the point where we have the situation we find in now that we have aging equipment at the end of its life expectancy. We are delaying buying stuff that are now becoming common standards of care because we don't have money in the budget to be able to do that. Yes, we do have a reserve. We do need to keep a reserve just for the crisis type situations and things that can pop up from time to time. Our industry says that we should have about 6 months. They say that, the people that know more than I do, we're about 3.5 months. So we want to try to maintain a reserve so that we can reach out, we can replace things as that break down, and when we have those unexpected expenses or other things that can crop up in this wonderful world that we have. But as we move forward, I want us to start looking into that telehealth, looking at how do we help people stay at home, how do we help people not go to the hospital and maintain a healthy one and work with our healthcare providers, with the doctor's offices, with the hospital and that, to provide that high quality of care.
Very good. Graham, thanks so much for taking time out of your day to be with us here on Public Perspectives. We'll do it again soon. We'll be reporting on that levy increase Tuesday night and Wednesday morning, so best of luck in that passing.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Graham. Public Perspectives here on AM 1340 KXCO.